Innovations in Sustainable Finance. A University of St. Gallen podcast by Julian Kölbel.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Innovations in Sustainable Finance. This is your host, Julian Kölbel. And we have today in the show, Bertrand Gasson, co-founder and CEO at Impact. And we'll say in a minute how this is spelled. But first of all, welcome very much, Bertrand, to be on the podcast.
Hi, Julian. Hi, everyone. Very happy to be here with you today.
Great. So Impact, the way I'm saying it, it is spelled I-M-P-A-A-K-T. In one sentence, Bertrand, tell us, what does Impact do? And first of all, am I saying this right?
Absolutely. It's just pronounced exactly as Impact, the normal word. We just have two A's because it stands for Analyze and Act, which is very much what we do. And that's a good transition to what is Impact all about. Basically, Impact's mission is to put sustainable finance back on the right track. Sustainable finance has derailed in many different dimensions recently, and we want to correct that and make sustainable finance work for all of us to get capital used as a way of making the world a better place.
So I poked around on your homepage, which is free to use and explore. It's very interesting. In some sense, Impact is another ESG rater. Or is it? What is different about your approach?
You could frame it this way, but we prefer to see ourselves as a wiki of impact. So we do document, we do analyze the sustainability of businesses and focus really on what we call impact maturity. So really the inside out aspect of sustainability, the impact that businesses have on the planet and society, that's very important. And we do that using a collective approach. So we're not the next expert, proprietary methodology. We basically have created a tool for citizen, by citizen, to retake power of sustainability and make sure we make it right, basically.
So in my view, the really innovative aspect, or one of them anyways, is that it's crowdsourcing information. And we'll definitely dig into that. And as you say, that it's Wikipedia of impact. But I'd also like to ask, since when is this around and what is your personal story behind it?
Oh, that's making us going back in time. But yes, my personal background is in sustainable finance. I actually started, almost 20 years ago out of personal conviction. I created this offering at BNP Paribas at that time. That was the very early days, building a team, starting products from scratch, having to get data on how sustainable are the businesses. And then I moved to different banks, leading the same types of offering, but always kept the same frustration with the quality of the data. Not just the quality, but what the data was really measuring. A lot of greenwashing around, not very satisfactory answers to the very simple question is which business, which companies is going to provide me with the most positive impact on the planet and society? That seems to be an easy question, but not an easy answer for sure. And we found out that there is something wrong with the way this question has been addressed by the sustainable finance from the very, very beginning. And so we decided to create our own platform, asking those know about that and asking the question about sustainability to those for whom it matters. And that is the citizens of this world. So you and me and everyone who actually is passionate about sustainability. So that's where Impact was born. That was back in at the late of 2019. So yeah, almost 5 years ago. And we started with this idea of building that wiki of impact and collectively document, analyze, and assess the many impacts that businesses have on the planet and society. So it was a very bold idea at the beginning. And we very quickly realized that it requires a lot of quality control mechanism to get it right, but we achieved that. And there's been a very, I would say, rewarding journey in terms of fighting against greenwashing and having a tool that every citizen can use for making investment decisions.
Well, that sure sounds exciting, and I'm glad to hear it has been an enjoyable experience. My summary of impact would be, after looking at it, that it's sort of a Wikipedia for sustainability or impact, in the sense that many contributors comment on what companies actually do. And at the same time, you introduce this new feature where you can then customize your preference, or basically insert your definition of what's important in terms of sustainability, and then generate scores on that basis. Is that a fair description, these two elements?
Yeah, I think that's a very good summary of what we do. We really have those two components. One is a collective intelligence mechanism where we all come together and find a consensus of what, you know, everyone thinks is a good company on different dimensions. But then, of course, it might very well differ depending on what are your preferences. And I think the last time we talked, Julian, you mentioned Google ratings for restaurants. And I think that was a very good analogy. Of course, you can go to Google restaurants and find what are the best restaurants in town, you know, as defined by all of the contributors, all of the participants. But then you might have your own set of criteria. Like, for instance, you pay a lot of attention to the quality of service, for instance, or I don't know, whatever, you know. And if that's the case, then you can give more weight to that dimension. And it will, of course, affect the list of the best restaurant in town. So we do exactly the same thing. We have that part where we all come together to document, extract information, verify the data, make sure the information is fair, objective. So that's really the wiki part of it. And we end up with a collective score. But then you can then come back to that and say, okay, that's the score for everyone. But, you know, I have a core interest in biodiversity, or I have a core interest, I don't know, in job creation or different dimensions of sustainability. And what would happen if I change these preferences? How would it, you know, change the scores of company, completely redesign who are the best and worst companies in the world? And this is what the second service is all about, is really making sure that you can have sustainability scores that work for you and that, you know, are not defined by your banker, basically.
Yeah. So let's discuss these two elements, which I think are both, in their own right, an innovation in this space. Let's discuss them in turn. On the Wikipedia part, so I poked around the platform. And it's great because you can sign up for free and just explore it. And then I decided to look into Microsoft a little bit, which was one of the companies that I found. And yeah, it really goes in quite a granular level. For example, there were analyses that were talking about Xbox, and one arguing that gaming is unhealthy and Microsoft thus has a really negative impact on health. And another one noting that gaming can be really a social affair and people find new friends through multiplayer games. So two quite different perspectives on this line of business that is, you know, a significant part of Microsoft, but still like one of many things that they do, of course. So it zooms you right into the granular discussions around sustainability. One questions I have is, who are these commentators, sort of who do you source these analyses, as they're called, from?
All right. So there are many, many points in what you just mentioned. I think the first one I would probably want to come back to is this notion of discussion, which is only a small part. I mean, not just small, it's an important part of the process. But before the discussion can take place, we need to document and get our hands on the facts, on the actual facts, because a large part of, you know, the sustainability dimension is not disputable. Is how many people are using your Xbox, what kind of scientific studies can we find that are documenting the both positive or negative effect of that. So all of that needs to be documented first. And to do that, we have built a specific training and certification program over the years. So more than 350,000 people have attended to that course, but only 620 actually succeeded in getting their certification. And you need to get that certification before you can actually produce content on the platform, really be able to write up those short summaries that we have, collect the data, verify the data. So the role of this part of the community is really to make sure that we collectively document all of the information and get the fact and figures right? Which already is a challenge because there's a lot of, you know, greenwashing, not always because the data we find is wrong, but because, you know, companies choose which data they want to talk about, and usually are very happy to talk about their positive impact and not so happy to talk about their negative impact. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done in terms of making sure we have a balanced, fair, objective, and fact-based documentation of the many impacts of companies.
I completely agree. Sorry to interrupt, but I'm really curious about this training process also that you described. I think I took the first exam sort of after, you know, looking at the content a little bit. I think where you mentioned there are thousands of people, and I'm allowed now to, I think, rate articles that I find, right? So that's kind of the first hurdle. But then you have a second tier, and I didn't make it to second tier because I think it's some effort involved. Then you are actually allowed to basically, well, that would be the equivalent of a Wikipedia contributor, right? You're actually allowed to edit the information.
Exactly.
And there you say you have 600 people who have reached that status?
Exactly. Yeah. So I took it the other way around. I started with the, you know, the most exclusive parts of the country. Yeah. Is the one publishing the content, basically.
Yeah.
It doesn't just stop there. Actually, there's also a whole team of reviewers that are making sure that these contributions are also, you know, meeting all of the quality standards that we have. So they're contributors, they're reviewers. So a lot of effort is being put in terms of quality. But because we want to have all of the facts, you know, done correctly in the right way, the part which is not disputable, before the discussion can really take place. We don't want the discussion to take place on, you know, based on people's assumptions and sometimes wrong assumption. Discussion is okay, but discussion needs to be fueled with undisputed fact and figure. So this is the role of this community of contributors. We call them the analyst, basically the analyst and the reviewers. And once they documented all of the impacts in a way which actually complies with our quality standard, then it's published on the platform. And then we've got a much, much bigger community of today, 60,000 people that are actually reading, getting to know this content, this fact, these figures. And then is the discussion taking place, and then is the rating taking place. Because then, when we've got all of these facts and figures, comes to the point where we have this aggregation confusion, as we call it in the industry, where, okay, you know, every company is having a lot of positive and negative impact. So how do you weight each of these impacts in a way that you can finally come to a final score, final sustainability score for the company? And this is where the trouble begins, really, because every single data provider applies their own grid, their own weightings. But what we do is basically calling to global society to do that. So we're not predefining that climate change is more important than plastic pollution or job creation. Or we look at all of that and ask those 60,000 people to basically discuss this and then finally vote. So that's what the last part is all about. And again, it's not based on whether you like or dislike Nestle or Toyota or Facebook. It's not about liking or disliking. It's about facts and figures, discussion, and then vote. And then we end up with weights that are different for each subject. And if I take the example, you took the example of Microsoft, I can take the example of Nestle. Nestle is a big contributor to job. They create a lot of job, not just internally, but also many farmers in the world depend mm-hmm. on Nestle for their revenues. So they're probably a good company when it comes to job creation, but they also have some negative impact, for instance, when it comes to packaging, plastic pollution, and so on. So which one is more important? This is not a decision that can be taken by me or the impact team. I don't think it's a decision that can be taken by any of the, you know, ESG data providers, even though they actually do it. I think this is a decision that needs to be taken collectively as a global society. And this is what the platform is all about.
Thank you for clarifying that there's first a layer of verifying facts. And I completely agree that this should be the basis of a rational discussion to establish those. And then there's a voting mechanism in the sense of which impacts are more important, less important in the particular case. If I understood you correctly, this can be bespoke even to the individual company, right? So we could have a different set of weights, for example, for Microsoft and Nestle, depending on what, you know, the community believes are the important points. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Even though there are also mechanisms that ensure a consistency across the board. So for instance, if you decide as a contributor that plastic pollution is a very big issue, very important, as persistent, deep, and broad impacts, You cannot decide that this is the case for Nestle, but this is not the case for Danone, right? So once you make the call for one topic, then it is applied to all the companies that are basically related to that topic in the same way. So there's no risk of, you know, distorted information because someone doesn't like Nestle or likes Danone more and has a different view for one company to the next. Again, it's more about defining whether plastic pollution is an important topic or not. And once this is the case, then the difference will be made based on how many tons of plastic pollution each of the company actually produces.
And those figures, the tons of plastic pollution, does that undergo a sort of vetting process? As you mentioned, there might be different ways to account for plastic pollution, right? There could be the issue that you outsource the unit that actually causes the plastic pollution and things like that. So that is part of the first layer, the verification.
Exactly. That's all the process of the first layer. This is where we put the biggest effort in is documenting this impact in the least disputable way. And you're right. I mean, it's a complex exercise because there's still a lack of standardization in the way those data are being reported or even sometimes not reported. So a lot of work is being done in terms of making sure we do this the right way, verifying every bit of information, complementing the information when sometimes it's only partially disclosed, putting in place rules that make sure that we can trust the data that is being documented. And that's the way it goes.
What is I'm trying to imagine this typical contributor. What is their incentive, if you will, to contribute to the platform?
So as you understood, we have two communities of contributors. So the one really writing up the analysis. So this is a real research work. So this has to be paid for. So the people there come to the platform, those that have been certified, they get access to a call for contribution engine, where we push all of the topics that need to be written about. So let's say Nestle and plastic pollution, we need someone to document this according to the guidelines. So someone will reserve that on the platform. They will produce their research. We will verify the research. There's a back and forth between the analyst and the reviewers until it gets to the right level of quality. And when that's the case, it's published on the platform and the analysts get paid. So that's for the analyst. And then the second part is really all of the citizens, so the 60,000 contributors today, and their motivation is not to get paid because they're not paid for that. It's really to, well, first of all, have access to that information. Be able to, you know, get knowledge about the real impact of businesses, be able to contribute if they like to, be able to provide their own ratings. And then this is where we link to the second service that we have introduced, which is the bespoke sustainability score. They actually come to the platform because they can then turn this collective assessment into something which is really adding value to themselves directly. They can weight their preferences in a different way and then get list of scores for 5,000 companies, but also list of investment products that really align with their own conviction, not that of their bankers, really, which is for me probably the biggest flaw today that we see in the industry. Every banker is, you know, creating their own products based on their own weights and their own convictions without really listening to what their own clients want, you know, to see when it comes to a sustainable fund. And that creates a big disconnect, a big frustration, many accusations of greenwashing. And maybe on that, I will just mention an anecdote that, I had as when I was myself serving clients and working with a bank here in Geneva. We went to visit a client in Sweden and the banker told me, you know, this client is really very passionate about sustainability. So we had spent a lot of time preparing a nice portfolio for that lady. And the banker was not more specific about what the lady meant with sustainability. And when we started the meeting very quickly, she was really upset with the fact that a few companies in the portfolio were coming out of the luxury sector. And they were, you know, from the sustainability standpoint, they were companies having made a lot of specific nice programs. But to that lady, a sustainable company was a company that was providing basic services to those in needs, to the low-income community. So it was about access to food, access to energy, access to health for people in low-income countries. And so for her, you know, that a luxury company was exactly the opposite of what she had in mind talking about sustainability. But if you do not take that into account, then you just end up building whatever portfolio, you're pretty sure that it will be disconnected with what your clients really want to see. So So what we do is basically, giving the power back to the clients, to the retail investors, to make sure that they can define themselves what sustainability is to them, and then realign that portfolio starting from that.
Yes, I'm glad you bring it up. So the second function, which I believe you told me you have just introduced, so it's live since a few weeks, is where you can go to the platform, and then I think it's 6 preferences where you can express how important these items are to you. So I think it's climate change, biodiversity, resource use, and then it's 3 in the social categories. I think it's labor equality and basically services to the bottom of the pyramid, if I'm correct, right? So these are kind of 6 basic dimensions, you could say, of sustainability. And then you can make up your mind which of these are more or less important to you relatively. And then my understanding is it takes these as inputs and then rotates the whole data in the back end and tells you, well, this is the optimal list of companies that you might want to invest in or at least look at. And it's a really neat feature. What I particularly liked, you get your heroes and villains. So a very nice idea to sort of express that in a very tangible fashion. So I did it. It's fun. So my hero ended up being Duolingo. I couldn't agree more. I love Duolingo. That's a company that creates really cool language learning experiences, and you can do it on your iPhone. I'm using it to study Arabic, for example. It's really cool. And my villain turned out to be International Paper. I don't know that much about International Paper, but I guess it's a paper company that probably has heavy resource consumption in terms of forestry, probably, and energy as well. And then you can engage with that, and you can, So what would you say at this stage? So I get your point. You know, I can set my preferences and sort of say, well, this really I care about. And then once you have that list, what would you say is the next step that people can take?
That's actually an excellent question, because if you remember when we started this podcast, I mentioned that impact was written with 2 A's, one mm-hmm. with analyze and the other one with act. So for us, the whole purpose of all of that is to be able to give to retail investors the tool to act. So the action is very important. So the first thing you get is you get to know, you get to analyze, you get the data that you need to understand who are your heroes, who are your villains, not just, you know, the most aligned and the worst aligned companies, but the whole 5,000 companies get a score based on your preferences. So it's not just the best and, you know, the heroes and the villains, it's the whole range of companies. And that is very important, because then we use that whole range to calculate scores of products. So not just individual score for companies, but then we use that to say, okay, if I look at all the ETFs or funds that are available out there, based on your personal score, Julian, what are the products that are really aligned or most aligned with your sustainability conviction? So the first action that you get out of that is list of investment products that are really aligned with what is dear to your heart. Okay, so that's the first action. Then you can, of course, well, contact your banker and say, I want to invest into that ETF or that fund. Of course, make sure that you discuss the financial performance first, because we only consider the impact dimension. And then so you can also directly invest through an investment platform if you use investment platform. But the first thing is starting to invest in the product that really align with your conviction. The second action is also about transparency. That's something which is a big frustration to me, because every time I ask my banker, you know, what do I have in my portfolio? As long as I do direct lines, it's okay. But as soon as I start investing through funds, my banker is actually struggling with this very simple answers, like these are the companies you have, you know, in your portfolio. And that's quite crazy when you think about that. It is your own money, and just knowing where your money is being invested is so complicated. But it's very important, because you cannot make sure you invest according to your conviction if you don't even know where your money is being invested. So the second action that you can do from the platform is actually require the transparency from your banker, and then use that extraction to scan your portfolio and get to know whether your current investment portfolio is actually aligned. So not even just finding new ways, but new portfolio, new products, but also scanning your existing portfolio. So that's the second action. And the third action is exclusion list. So you mentioned that list of heroes and villains. when you go through the list of all the companies, you can find the companies that really are not aligned, and that, you know, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, 20, 100 companies that you really don't want to see in your portfolio. You build that list, and then there's a feature that basically sends that list to your banker, requiring that they exclude these companies from any of your investments. So that's really three very concrete examples of action that have been integrated into the platform to make sure you realign your portfolios with your sustainability conviction.
That is very actionable that you say, well, not only you see the list of companies, but also you see products that you can basically click on and say, well, this is based on what I've put in, close to where my preferences lie. Do you then have the underlying constituents of these products to make that kind of judgment? Or do I have to sort of go and get an Excel file from my bank and put it into the platform?
So we have done the job, albeit I have to say it's work in progress, because there are hundreds of thousands of products available out there. And today, as you mentioned, this service has been only released actually 7 days ago. So we have started to upload ETFs on the platform. The transparency on ETF is easier to get than the transparency on investment funds. And then, of course, every week we keep adding new products on the platform. And you're right to say we need to have the look through. We need to have the constituents of this product, because what we do is we go back to the individual companies with your score, Julian scores, Bertrand scores, everyone scores. And then based on these scores at the level of the company, then we look at the constituent of the fund and we calculate an aggregate for the portfolio, for the fund itself, or for the ETF. So we need to have the knowledge, we need to have the transparency and the constituents of these funds for us to be able to calculate your own score for these products. And your score will be very different from mine, just because we don't have the same sustainability preferences.
So thank you for taking us through the elements. So it's the Wikipedia element where many, many people contribute to the analyses of 5,000 companies, you said. And then there's the piece where I can myself put in what is important to me and get an extraction of the companies that I might be aligned with. And then actually third, I can even link that to actually existing products and think about a concrete investment. So thanks for explaining also the analyze and act story behind the name. On a conceptual level, you mentioned that a few times, but I want to make it explicit. You have, at the conceptual level, a clear focus on impact materiality, right? And I think that's important, because crowdsourcing data and, you know, verifying from different perspectives and angles is great as long as you have, at least conceptually, one goal. Right. If you have people with different goals in mind, then that wouldn't work very well. But you sort of very explicitly say what we care about is the impact of the company's products and operations on society and planet. And deliberately, you say we do not consider the financial repercussions, or sort of the financial materiality, as it's called, in terms of lawsuits that the company might be hit with, or consumer boycotts, right? It's only the channel from the firm to the world.
Exactly. And that's a very, very important point. That actually has been central to even the reason why we created Impact at the first time, because a very big reason for the frustration we had as investors is that the so-called ESG data we were using is very much focusing on what you just mentioned is the financial maturity. So I don't know how much or the people listening to this podcast are familiar with these notions, but when you talk about sustainability, there are actually two different angles you should consider, or you could consider it. The first one is what we call the impact materiality, and that really is the question about how much impact the company is having on the planet and society, and that it is the only thing we care about. Not just because we have made that decision, but because it's actually very often what the retail investors care about. They want to know what their portfolio, you know, the impact that their portfolio are having on the planet and society. And so we only answer this question. Now, there's another question that you can answer talking about sustainability, is how much the planet and society can have as an impact on the company, on the business. And I usually, you know, take climate change as an example of that so that it makes things more concrete for people. But talking about climate change, you can look at the thing in two ways. You can say, okay, how much this company is actually emitting GHG emissions every year. So that would be the impact of that company on the planet, right? So that's that. Most of the time, people, when they talk about climate change and the company's sustainability, this is what they have in mind. But there's another way you can look at that is, okay, is that company likely to be affected by climate change itself? So for instance, if you're Nestle and climate change is creating some draw or some floods, or, you know, you're at risk of having your harvest and your crops being affected by climate change. So that's the same question about climate change, but this time you look at the effect on the business and not the other way around. So this is a question which we are not interested in. We're not saying this is not a question that is also interesting, particularly for investors, because when you invest in a company, you also want to make sure that, you know, you manage and you understand the risks. But this is not the question impact is all about. The question impact is all about is really the impact maturity. So how much the company is actually affecting the planet and society. And this whole collective intelligence, crowdsourced, high quality process that we've built have been completely designed to answer only that question. It's very clear on the platform. All the training, all the onboarding, all the questioning, all the verification process, everything is built around that. So there is no confusion for people actually, you know, not just writing the content, but also rating the content, that this is the only question we care about.
I think on this front, I really want to congratulate you, because strategy often is more about what you don't do rather than what you do. And so having the guts to say, well, this is something that a lot of people are thinking and talking about, clearly, but this is not what we do. We focus on the impact. I think that gives you a very clear edge. And it's also essential, as you mentioned, if you have an army of, you know, partially volunteers who contribute, it's important to be on the same page what this is about. Otherwise, there would be indeed quite a bit of confusion that is purely due to having different things in mind.
Absolutely. And I may just add on this note, I think, you know, one of the big frustration I had when I was dealing with private clients myself was exactly that. You know, we were using ESG data to answer a question, and their question could not be answered with ESG data, because their question was, is my portfolio having a positive impact on the planet? And we were answering with the data that was telling, is the planet having a positive impact on your portfolio? And so that created a lot of misunderstanding, disconnection, accusation of greenwashing. You know, if you look at MSCI, which is the largest provider of ESG data, they're very clear about the fact that what they do is what we don't do. What they do is answering the question about the impact that the planet is having on the company. And not surprisingly, they can come with very different answers because they're not answering the same question. So if you look at Coca-Cola, for instance, it's always a very big surprise for people that Coca-Cola can end up with a triple A, so the best possible score with MSCI. But you know, because they don't understand, they say, oh, but Coca-Cola is the largest, you know, plastic polluter. It creates obesity. It generates a lot of GHG. How can they end up with, you know, a triple A? But this is not the question that MSCI is answering. So it does make sense that Coca-Cola, or it might make sense that Coca-Cola is triple A, but not if you ask the question about their impact on the planet. So again, make sure that if you're a retail investor yourself, and if you ever talk with your banker, make sure that if you ask the question about sustainability, you're clear about what is it that you mean with sustainability. It might not be the same thing that what your banker means about sustainability.
I completely agree. This clarity about the aim is essential. And I fear that it's often just easier to sell, to say, well, this is about broadly about sustainability, so it's good, you know, you're doing the right thing. But then again, it's also good for your financial performance. So then, you know, who could say no to that? And it's important to realize that this is just not the same thing. If there's something that you care about from, you know, an individual moral stance, perhaps, then you should focus on that and not instrumentalize it and say, well, this is actually also good for return. So in that sense, I really like to see your innovation here, and thanks for bringing it up. On the impact a little bit beyond the firms that you're investing in, but also as an investor, do you have a theory of change, you know, in the bigger picture with what you're doing? And specifically, what I am curious about, how does this translate into better outcomes? You know, how do you think firms will perhaps, essentially, we're looking at firms to change also, right? And we're not only looking at firms to be green, we're also looking at firms that, you know, we had International Paper came out as my villain. So, you know, is there a feedback between your data and International Paper's to perhaps reform some of the things that they do?
Yeah, absolutely. We hope so, because that's really the heart of the mission of Impact. I mean, we are a social business ourselves. So we do all of that to make sure that businesses actually change. And so the theory of change is really about, you know, the strong signal which is given by shareholders to the company's management. This is something that I've had the chance to witness myself very often in my professional life. The CEO and executive committee of a company, there are a few stakeholders they actually listen to. And surprisingly, it's not so much their clients, it's not so much their employees, but it's very much their shareholders. There's, you know, the one group that they really listen to is their shareholders. So if they see that there are movements of, you know, massive movement of shareholders making investment decision to, for instance, divest from a company for sustainability reasons, then this will have a very, very strong impact on the way the management react. So of course, there's no additionality when you go to listed companies, because we mainly focus on listed companies. So it's not like your money is actually going to change anything for the company. You're just buying a share from, you know, one existing shareholder to the next, and unless you go for primary market, which is often not the case. But it does have a huge impact on the signal that you give to those companies that you're willing to sell their shares if they do not behave and if they don't make the change that actually you want to see. So that's really the theory of change. I have to say there's another very much more operational, I would say, lever that we also have put in place. Part of our business is to also directly work with the corporate themselves. And we do that through the same notion of stakeholder engagement. As part of the European CSRD regulation, it is now mandatory for businesses to actually assess their impact by engaging their stakeholders. This is what we call the double materiality assessment. So they have to do the double materiality that we mentioned, not only the financial materiality, but the impact materiality. And they have to do that engaging with their stakeholders. So they have to ask their stakeholders what they think of their impact, and which is, of course, at the heart of what we do. And when doing so, then we work with corporates to bring the stakeholders' voice and make sure that, you know, the corporates, the companies actually change based on that. So it's a much more direct way of making sure we see actual change at the level of the businesses.
So you can offer as a service to corporates basically a stakeholder survey around impact and financial materiality, which is, of course, a nice, I suppose it's a source of revenue for you as well. But this data is then not lost for the individual company. It actually also enters the collection of data and analysis and rating that you have on the platform. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And even better than that, it actually helped them directly generating their regulatory reports, because this is mandatory for them to do that. So it's the data management system, it's a stakeholder engagement platform, and it's a reporting tool for them to use directly. So this is where we actually have a large part of our revenues coming from today.
Is it, so in Wikipedia, you sometimes have these little fights between editors on really contentious subjects, right? And people try to, you know, to manipulate part of the information. Is that an issue in your case? You know, has there been a case, or, you know, do you have some measures to detect or prevent that sort of thing?
Of course, it is always an issue when you do, you know, collective intelligence types of mechanism. It's very powerful, but it's also very dangerous. Many people have, you know, their own agenda. Many people are here just to create some distorted information. So it only works if you have very, very strong, very powerful quality control mechanisms. So there's a whole series of mechanisms. Some of them are upstream in terms of training, selection, certification. So not everybody is able to actually contribute. That's the first part of the mechanism. Some other mechanisms are, I would say, mid-stage. So it's the reviewing process. So there's an independent team of reviewers that are, you know, making a different call and could react if, you know, they see any form of bias or manipulation attempts. And then there is also control that are done ex post based on algorithms, so artificial intelligence that we use to basically make sure that the ratings that are being done on the platform are not suspicious, so we can detect any anomaly, any suspicious pattern, any inconsistency, any lazy rating that happens. And when it is the case, then we just basically, well, remove those ratings from the platform. And if that's the case, also we're able to freeze the account of some contributors. So we've done that in the past. Not so often, I have to say. We haven't really been attacked, maybe because we're still too small, I don't know. Or maybe also because the one common feature of the people contributing to the platform is actually the passion for sustainability. So I think there's a whole community also which is kind of mission aligned and really take their own responsibility to making sure that the content is of high quality. You see that to some extent in Wikipedia as well. You know, there's this some kind of guardians that, you know, are spending a lot of time and a lot of effort making sure that the quality is always improved. We see the same time of reaction and behaviors on the platform as well.
Beautiful. Well, I'm glad you're on top of that. And that last point, I can only echo that. It's great if there is this element of a community. And essentially, people are working towards a shared goal, even though they are paid, perhaps. So that is good to know. Well, thank you so much for sharing all these insights and stories with us. I truly find it interesting and innovative. So thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks.
At the end, I always ask people to sort of make a look into the future. So if you look to the future, what is one thing that you are afraid of and one thing you hope for?
Wow, that's a tough one. Well, of course, it has to do with what has been my life in the last 20 years, but I'm still afraid that, you know, we're losing the race against time. We know that there are many, many big challenges that we have to solve. And in my view, all of the amount of work that I have been myself involved in for a large part of my professional life has been rather, you know, a diversion. And in particular, all of the ESG development, which in some ways was more focused again on financial maturity, I don't think it really helps moving the needle to, you know, as quickly as we had. So I think there's been a lot of resources injected into that we should have injected directly into impact and not just ESG. And my concern is that we need to stop that as quickly as possible and refocus on real impact, making sure that, you know, sustainable finance and sustainable business actually work in practice. We should see results that we're not seeing at the scale that we need to today. So that's really what I'm afraid of. But at the same time, this is also the one thing I'm the most hopeful for. I think that the missing piece in this whole architecture is citizen empowerment. I think, you know, we didn't get the citizen to, you know, we didn't give them the means to really take action, easy means to really create this kind of momentum of mobilization, citizen mobilization, to really make things change more radically, more quickly. I think regulation is always too late, always come after, you know, civil society. Corporates are not as reactive as I would have hoped for, and particularly not in sustainable finance. I think there's still so many bad reasons for not acting. And so if you really want to see the change at the scale we need, then this is where all of us need to regain control and all of us we need to retake power. And this is what this whole platform is all about, is making sure we have the tools as citizen, not to listen to the bankers, not to listen to the regulators, not to listen to, you know, the corporates, but really take action directly ourselves.
Thank you for this last word, Bertrand. And well, all the best of luck with the platform. I will make sure to put the URL into the show notes so that people can, like me, poke around and rate and potentially contribute in the future. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Julia. Thank you to everyone. It was a pleasure to be here with you today.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Innovations in Sustainable Finance. A University of St. Gallen podcast by Julian Kölbl.